Thank you for downloading this sermon from Heritage Baptist Church. We are so glad that you did. We believe that biblically faithful, Christ-centered, God-glorifying local churches are the primary means that God has chosen to expand His kingdom. If you are part of such a church, we hope that this message will supplement your spiritual diet. If you aren't yet part of such a church, we would love for you to visit us. For more details, please check out our website, www.heritagebaptist.co.za.
That's okay, but fellowshipping would be more distinctively Christian, I would say. Pastor Leo Ashwani, there he is. Oh, there he is. Or if you want to say something.
Well, I know those extents.
I'm not a Pope. Probably the blanket love method is not. not working. So often, though, because if you think about it, you can't be constantly correcting or rebuking everybody. We all sin every day, the best of us, and in a variety of situations. So, you know, we're not called upon to just be constantly confronting and rebuking people because of sin. But we don't want to just excuse sin. But there is this reality of covering over some sin with a blanket of love. But if you cannot do that, then you definitely have to speak to that person. If it's a very serious sin in your judgment, you should not use the blanket of love method. Again, what that is as far as seriousness, that's a different question. But then you pray that God will give you a right heart attitude towards that person who you believe has sinned against you. And then you make it at times, and I'm not saying you schedule an appointment, but you ask God to help you to indeed make time to meet with that person one-on-one, privately. Privacy could be here in this building where you're sitting over here, but you're talking. So it doesn't have to be alone. And a good way to begin is to just pray with that person, say, look, I have something I need to talk to you about. And may I first pray, let God be with us. And you do that, and then you take the posture that you may have misunderstood. So brother or sister, the other week you said this to me. I think it was sinful. I think you sinned against me, but maybe I didn't understand you correctly. Maybe I misinterpreted what you said and did, but help me to understand. Because sometimes we do misinterpret what somebody does or says, and some can be hypersensitive. So you're taking that posture, helping to understand. And if a person says whatever, and it's very clear neither was sin, say, well, brother or sister, you know, honestly, I was offended. I believe you sinned against me when you said A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And hopefully that person then says, I'm very sorry, I didn't mean to offend you, but please forgive me for my sin, A, B, C, D, and G. So that, and then you should be willing to then truly forget the problem. That's what God does when you confess your sins. What are we told in Micah? He casts our sins into the depths of the sea and remembers them no more. As far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from him, from us as well. So you have to be willing to ask for forgiveness, give forgiveness, and truly be reconciled as a result.
Absolutely. I just want to put a point down and choose the rule of love to cover the sin. When you do make that decision, that means you cannot have a bitterness. It is a literal, you know, love covering that. And if you don't, then there's no room for bitterness in that. So, in all of these, there's an action that you take, rather you confront, or you forgive them, or you let love cover that sin. But what is dangerous is not acting on it. That's the seed that causes disunity, ultimately, if it is not dealt with. And, you know, without mentioning names, Google speak to trusted brothers and say, hey, this happened, can't tell you who. What do you think? Do you think it's worth me speaking with this person? If you know, you are struggling with deciding what to do. And the next question is, what things do you think cause our generation to struggle with prioritizing Christian fellowship that we need to look out for?
Well, in America, people waste is the right word, Christians, they waste too much time on social media. So, that's not fellowship. Fellowship is face-to-face. Or maybe it's over the phone in a conversation, but not social media. So, some people waste a lot of time on social media, and that inhibits them from spending their time in some other meaningful way. So don't misunderstand me, I'm not against social media. I'm just saying, how is it used? And you spend on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or whatever. And when those who've been willing to honestly check that out, they've been horrified to realize how much time they're spending on social media. And that time could be used for studying theology. That time could be used for developing certain gifts. That time could be used for planning face-to-face fellowship with somebody. Even just going out to chat at coffee or some other event maybe that the church organizes. So I would just say, you know, you need to assess how you're using your time. So, you know, I'm not sure what to answer the question.
I think the question was, what do we need to look out for? Things that cause our generation not to prioritize.
Well, that's one way.
Yeah.
For gaming, again, in America, this is a problem. Sadly, some countries of group Christians, they're doing, I mean, gambling. It shouldn't be doing that, but gaming, you know, on their computer or on their smartphone or whatever. So, to be intentional, you have to talk to one another. Let's just talk about the guys. With some of your friends, well, when are you free in the upcoming week with your university studies or your work responsibilities or whatever it may be? Could we get together over coffee and chat, see how we're all doing spiritually? You said there's the small groups, of course, that's the only way to get together, but unofficially, some other ways would be something like that. Or the ladies can do the same thing, you know, plan ahead and just make appointments to do something together in order to socialize, in order to get to know one another better, in order to, and of course, naturally talk about productive spiritual realities. Am I making sense?
Yes.
Do you all need coffee? Courage, you need grace, you need patience, you need love, as we've been here. So before you go, you say, Lord, I don't have courage, but I need courage. I think I have love, but Lord, I'm so afraid. You know, help me with courage. Help me to say the right words, not say the wrong words. So you pray before you go. God can give you that courage. And you need that, not only in these relationships, but you need that when you get married. Now, hopefully, when you get married, you're not afraid of your spouse, your husband, or your wife. But if you have a strong-minded, knowledgeable, theologically sharp husband who's a leader, it's all good. You shouldn't be married to him if you're intimidated by him, okay? But you might think, oh, my husband, you know, if I say this to him, he'll probably say, Walden, honey, in the Bible, blah, 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 blah. And you think, okay. Well, so you learn how to have wisdom and courage and that kind of proper confrontation now, before you're married. And you definitely shouldn't marry somebody that intimidates you. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think of the story of David and Nathan.
Yeah.
Trusting the Lord, I'm going to speak to the king about this. Mm-hmm. That was a clear blind spot. You should have been a blind spot, but you heard it somehow. Mm-hmm. Still, that was just one classic example of the Lord opening the scales of his eyes after being confronted with this sin. The final question, at least what has been posted, is what are practical ways of trying to bridge age or generational gaps in building and strengthening relationships within our church? Yeah, probably add, you know, cultural gaps as well. The multicultural, multi-generational. How do you bridge those gaps?
My understanding is those who are students, I guess, you either live on the campus or you have an apartment. Maybe some live with families, I'm not sure. But those who are married who have an apartment or home, or those of you who are not married, you have to be appropriate in your situation as unmarried men and women. But I'll just speak by way of illustration with married couples. So a married couple can invite those from different cultural backgrounds in the church, different generation in the church, into their home for a meal, let's say on Friday night or whatever, to get to know them. And you get to know the people who invited you as well. So when you're not married, okay, that's a little more challenging, but that's what I would say. You have to be intentional, to use that word. Say, I want to get to know some people in the congregation that I actually don't know yet. So, how exactly we do that, whether it's, again, I'm not asking for one man and one woman to pair off at a coffee shop. But, you know, several of you guys, again, I'm not sure if this is culturally appropriate, I'm just saying, I'm trying to give illustrations. You say, well, I don't really know these particular individuals, like any women or other guys from a different cultural background, whatever, you know, trying to get together socially with coffee or with a meal and get to know one another. There's a real blessing in getting to know, for most of you are younger, and I'll pick on these two brothers that I see with gray hair. So they're older. I have gray hair as well. I'm also bald, you know. But anyway, the point is it is a real blessing. My wife and I do this intentionally at Trinity in New Jersey, where every Sunday, virtually every Sunday, we have folks over for an afternoon meal between services. And we intentionally invite people that we really don't know. Maybe they're visitors also. Maybe visitors we definitely don't know. But older folks, younger folks, married folks, single folks, men, women, educated, uneducated, you know, we do that. And it's always been a real blessing for us, and we thank for them as well. well. You can make it happen, is what I'm saying. You have to be wise. You can always consult Pastor G or Pastor Layla or Mishwani as well. Say, I'm thinking of doing this. What do you think about that idea? I'm not saying you have to go to the pastors for everything like that. I'm just saying if you're lacking courage or you think I need some wisdom, ask them, what do they think about this idea? You should try and do that. It expands your horizon as a Christian when you get to know other people with different backgrounds, culturally, socially, financially, whatever. It really is a wonderful reality for the Christian.
Great. The question I said, he's not here, just passed. But I think that's awesome. Are there any more questions on the floor? I think we have time for one or two more questions.
So, I have a question. I just wanted to say that we printed out the questions, so that meant there was a cutoff. So, if you send your question afterwards, feel free to ask it now, just so in case it's not on that printout that you have.
Get some courage out. Ask a question. Don't be intimidated by an American.
Yes, yes.
On the aspect of love and love one another in the church, how does one go about there is a worldly aspect with philosophical brother or sister, in this case, as it says, the thought is maybe the sister is being harmed, or the sister, you know, maybe the brother might be something else other than religious serving. And how do you really help the brother or sister in that instance where the brother or sister is serving out of love? Christian,
God in love,
and not
intending
to mislead
others. Did anyone get the question?
Yes.
I think I understood the question. Would it be someone like yourself wanting to serve someone else here in the church in a practical way, you mean? And it would be you, you're obviously a woman. So you're saying, can I do that? Somehow serve another man or men in the church? Is that part of the question?
Maybe if I rephrase it.
Pardon?
If I can try to rephrase it, just tell me if I summarize it quickly. But yeah. How can you serve someone from the opposite sex without causing temptation, both for him or for her, without leading them on? You said you need that one in the US?
Yeah. You know, these questions are this excellent question. And with a lot of these kinds of questions, it's not like one size fits all. It's not like there's one answer that just answers everything, because they're all slightly different, so wisdom is needed. If you're not sure whether or not this is a wise thing to do, then you speak to somebody like this gentleman here. Seriously, to get input, would this be wise to do this? You have to be, the one-on-one with a man and a woman, you know, that unless you're dating, courting, or whatever, that you don't want to mislead, you're right. So maybe it's not just you, maybe it's a couple of sisters, and maybe it's several brothers, and you agree you're going to go out handing out gospel tracts in a local park or something. Or maybe you agree that you're all going to go to coffee together. You know, I think most Christian women know how to not flirt and lead a guy on, and be pure and chaste in conversation. And most Christian guys should understand how to do that as well. So leaves in her garden because it's autumn, or in order to wash the windows of Anne Rimbaugh's house. She's a widow. And so they're doing an activity together that's helping somebody else in the church. And, you know, you can socialize while you're doing that, and it's a helpful way to get to know one another better. So I'm not sure, though, if what I'm saying there is along the lines of what you're thinking or helping. You can tell me if it's not. I won't be hurt or offended.
Yeah. And it was a practical thing in life.
I think if you can speak to it, you should, because think of the example of Aquila and Priscilla, husband and wife. They actually took Apollos, a preacher, who the scripture tells us he was eloquent. He was clearly very gifted. They took him aside because they realized there were certain things he was actually saying publicly that were not quite right biblically. So, as a couple, they took him aside and they instructed him in the ways of God more perfectly. So, there's an illustration of something like that. And again, I think it's a good illustration in the sense that he was not just an ordinary person, but they didn't fear to speak to him about something they realized was not quite right. So I think if you have the grace and courage to do it, you say, well, brother or sister, do you think what you're saying is really accurate biblically? What do you think? Where have you gotten this idea? Because sometimes people just simply need to be gently led that way by asking them the question, where do you get that thinking from the scriptures? And many people are sincerely wrong, and they don't know they're sincerely wrong. So you can help them to be now sincerely right. And or you could say, if it's something you feel you can't really handle, you say, dear brother, I'm not sure, or sister, I'm not sure that that's really right, but I would encourage you, why don't you go to Pastor G and speak to him about that? I think it would be good if you did that. Would you be willing to do that? So get some, yeah, I'd be willing to do that. Am I answering your question? Or, only a little bit?
Yeah, I think that would all, you know, if the tables are turned around, would I appreciate someone coming to talk to me about that? I think you, in your case, I mean, you've been through for years, you've read scripture, I think you can trust just the joy that you have, you know, and it's all in the spirit of how you do it, that you've got to do it with gentleness. And some folks might choose to speak to this person about this, but, you know, would I wish someone to do this to me? Then, and if you answer the heart yes, I'll be inclined to. We have time for two more questions. Yes, his brother was up, his hand was up first, so it's okay. I'll come back to you.
If you're not that close to the person, asking someone who's closer to them, they might receive it better. For that person to kind of show them their fault. Versus if you just don't know that well, they might just be quite shocked.
Yeah, could be. And that's all in the realm of wisdom, so I actually agree. We can take Joe and then we'll take one more.
In the second session, we're talking about you're supposed to be forbearing with other people's deformities. I say in the second session where you were saying we're supposed to be forbearing with others' informities and deformities. So what do these look like in a practical sense? And then how do we do that without seeming inconsiderate of what they are going through as a person?
So the question, Joseph, is how do we forbear with somebody who
has deformities, like deformed, like you said, deformities when you're saying the title.
Infirmities, you understand?
Yeah.
Give an example, man.
You have such an excellent Kenyan accent.
Give an example. Okay.
You say infirmities.
Infirmities, oh, okay, I'm sorry.
So like, how would you, is there an example that you would have, like, for it to look practical? Was it a physical thing, or is it something they normally do, like an action, or is it, and then how do we, let's say, if we were to forbear, like, if we see someone having this thing, do we say, okay, that's something that he has, but then how do we, if you were to, let's say, if he needs correction, or like if he needs guidance or something, without looking inconsiderate?
I was certainly not thinking primarily or I don't know that I was thinking at all about a physical infirmity. I mean, obviously, there are folks with physical infirmities. We need to also treat them with love because they have physical infirmities. But I was thinking more, it could be emotional infirmities. It could be mental infirmities. So at Trinity Baptist Church, we have two members of the church who are both young men, and they're both truly autistic. Do you know what autism is for you? And so that brings with it challenges. So we need to love them and help them to grow. So sometimes they do things that are really very socially odd. They don't even realize it. You can help them to understand that because they actually don't mind you. Usually, as being autistic, they don't mind say, so-and-so, in that situation, I don't think you realized it, but let me help you. So, you could do that. But there are people who have infirmities, let's say emotionally. They're easily anxious. Now, anxiety can be, of course, a sin. We're not to be anxious for anything. But it's more of an infirmity where that particular individual, and I found through the years, it's as much men as it is women, and very just easily vulnerable to becoming anxious when there's uncertainties in the world, or in the government, you know, it's on the news, or uncertainties with regards to the economic situation in their life. You know, they need someone who's going to encourage them by saying, remember how God tells us through the Apostle Paul that we're to be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication. And the person may say, I'm thinking of somebody right now, actually a woman, and she'll say, yeah, but I am bringing it to God in prayer. And then I say, but Paul didn't stop there. He said, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving. And I said to this lady, it's an older saint, I said, have you given thanks to God for this particular thing that concerns you? You don't thank God for sin, but other, you know, things that produce the anxiety in the world around her. It's, you know, you thank God for this, and thank God for many things. So, you know, it's that kind of helping somebody with, in that case, infirmities where it's a fearfulness. Have you ever read Pilgrim's Progress? So, you know, John Bunyan gives different characters in Pilgrim's Progress, and one of them, I think, is a Mr. Fearful, I think. I haven't read it in quite a few years. But there are Christians that are that way, and they need help. And that's just one example off the top of my head. Does that help this one?
Final question.
Instead, you go directly to the deacon or a deacon, or you go directly to one of the pastors, and you ask the question, you say, well, this was said in a congregational meeting, these decisions were made, I understood what was said, but I'm not sure that I fully understand, or if I actually think that maybe I disagree. So you go and speak one-on-one privately, and that's not murmuring, that's simply talking and getting hopefully some more understanding, insight, maybe information that helps you to understand this is why this decision was made. Now, if it doesn't help you, you still have questions. Submission is submitting wholeheartedly, cheerfully, willingly to someone in authority when you actually don't really agree with them. So it's not just husbands and wives. So I have to submit myself to my fellow pastors, and I've had to do that on different times where in our discussions I've said to them, brothers, I don't agree with your thinking on this, here's why, and they have said there's five of us, so four of us said, Jeff, as we've talked this out, the four of us think this is the right course. So my response must not be murmuring. I already have the information I need. My response must be a godly submission to my fellow pastors, even though I don't agree. So I now don't go elsewhere and say, you know, I don't really agree with the decision of my other four pastors. No, I don't do that. That's sinful. So you go for more information. Sometimes pastors are not at liberty to give you more information, you see. They're holding back information, not sinfully, holding back information wisely and confidentially for good, godly, biblical reasons. And they may say, sister so-and-so or brother so-and-so. There are other reasons, but they're not. It's not information that we're at liberty to tell you in a congregation. There are good and wise reasons why we're keeping it back. And so you have to trust us. And so that's why you say, no problem. You don't go talking to other people about it. You say in my heart, okay, God calls me then to submit to my pastors on this matter and trust them. They're godly men. They're biblically qualified. I don't know if that's, is that addressing what you're talking about? Yeah. So, and again, you know, it's not submission. If you said to me, Pastor Jeff, you want to have some coffee and chocolate? For me to say, I will gladly do that. That's not submission, because I love chocolate. I love coffee. But if you said, Pastor Jeff, we're going to eat fish tonight for dinner. Would you like that? He'd say, well, I will submit and eat the fish. I mean, I'm being silly here. I'm just trying to illustrate. Submission is when you don't agree. And not, it should be a simple disagreement. You have a judgment this way, you realize the pastor's judgment is this way, they are an authority over you. You seek more information, maybe they give more information, it helps you. Maybe they say, we can't, but you have to just trust us. That's a godly thing to do, to trust those with leadership over you. It's hard sometimes in America, probably in South Africa, because often those in authority over us, like in government, you know, it's hard to trust them because they're not trustworthy. But your pastors are godly Christian men. And so you have to say, no, I will trust them and submit to them and not murmur in my heart, and certainly not murmur to anybody else, but have a heart of submission that is willing and cheerful and gladly submitting to their decision on the subject. So, good question, though. Very good question.
Thank you, Pastor Smith. This concludes our conference and study on duties of Christian fellowship. I would like to introduce you to Pastor Smith for his time this evening.